Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Jamie Williams, wealth advisor with Ellenbecker Investment Group. So today I'm joined by Tammy Niemann, my fellow wealth advisor, and also someone who has a great deal of experience in the topic we're going to discuss today, which is really about home financing strategies, making the best of, you know, your planning when it comes to mortgages, thinking about different ways to finance a variety of different things. And I'd like to welcome you to the show today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you, Tammy. Yeah, we've had the opportunity. I've worked with you now for a few years. It's been wonderful. Anytime I have a question about strategizing around mortgage planning or something that comes up that might be unique in terms of a project or a client situation, I think you're my first call.
I think it's my specialty in the firm is anything related to real estate. I love real estate, spent many, many years in banking, so all things mortgage. And I think today it'll be great just to talk about what today's buyers really need to know as it relates to mortgage financing, buying a home, or even new construction or home improvements.
Oh my gosh, I know. We have so much to cover today. And when it comes to the changing landscape of mortgage, obviously, you started many, many years ago. Why don't you just share with us a little bit? You don't have to say all the details, but tell us about your experience. Like, where did you start and how did you get into mortgage?
So I'll be honest with you. I was in banking almost for 25 years. I know, shocking. It doesn't look like I'm that old, right? We should all say yes to that. But so I started in mortgage lending in the early 90s. So I was just talking to you today in my office about the very first refinance craze we had. We went from double digits. It was like 10%. And we went down to 7%. And I was in Madison lending. And I can remember our local banks were charging really high application fees. And clients would have to wait weeks to get in because back then, you had to go sit down at a desk with a mortgage lender. So that's where I got my feet wet in mortgage lending. Stayed in it for 25 years. So I still consider it kind of my first love. And so anything related to mortgage, I come alive with. So
isn't it amazing at how much the whole concept of mortgage lending ties into financial planning and wealth management?
I talk about it weekly. And so I've been with the EIG team as a wealth advisor now for just shy of 4 years. Amazing. And I can tell you there hasn't been a week that goes by that we don't talk about our real estate strategies in our clients' portfolios because it is a significant part of their wealth.
It's an integral part of the planning. And I didn't go right into lending, but I remember working for a bank and getting my first mortgage in the 90s. And you know, first time home buyer, and the mortgage banker was so thrilled to share that I was going to get 7.625%.
And you were happy with 7.625%.
I didn't know any better, right?
It was a great rate.
So let's just kind of touch on that for a little bit because we've been on this rate journey now since COVID. And now that we're working on 6 years, where at one point the 10-year US Treasury fell below like an epic level. Historic low.
Right.
And rates were down to what, like 2.6, 2.5?
Mid twos was what I remember being the lowest rate, sustained rate.
Okay.
So yeah, 2.625 was on a 30-year fix with no points was something very achievable for an extended period of time. I want to say it was probably a year and a half or longer. So if you weren't buying a house, you were refinancing. And so a lot of homeowners are in some really fantastic rates right now.
That's created a lot of implications too. We'll touch on that today.
Yes, we will.
In terms of like the idea or the mindset that we're kind of exploring with this. So let's talk a little bit about like where rates are at today. And then I would like to share a little bit of just some general high level mortgage concepts.
Yeah.
So I think I checked this morning, rates were like around 6.2 somewhere in there.
Yeah, they are hovering in the early sixes, which is still
historically very good.
Right.
And let's just kind of share like fixed versus adjustable rate mortgage and some of the other programs out there. What might people maybe be thinking about with a fixed versus an ARM?
So a 30-year fixed rate, 20 or 15-year fixed rate. Those are the three terms that are common. The 30-year fixed rate by far is the most common. And it it is. It's locked in at 6.25, yep. Set and certain. It's what most people gravitate to. Now, the adjustable rate mortgages, or ARM, they can come in 1, 3, 5, 7, or 10 years, meaning they're fixed for those respective terms.
Sure.
So fixed for 7 years. You know, and you get a slightly lower rate. So maybe they're in the high fives, mid fives, maybe, potentially. So you could save some interest. So maybe this would be something you could entertain if you knew I'm only going to be here for 3 to 4 years. I'm going to sell.
A planning tool.
Right. So, you know, some of the doctors we used to mm-hmm. work with, you know, they're mm-hmm. here doing the residency for 4 years. They're in and out. Maybe an ARM was something worth talking about. I still get a little heartburn about it because, you know, mm-hmm.
yeah,
plans are static. Life is not. And so, but if at the end of that ARM, at the end of 5 years, let's say you're still in that ARM, there are caps. It can't go mm-hmm. from 5% to 10.
Right.
Usually there's caps, meaning it can't go up more than 2 percentage points per year or 5 for the life. So there are some caps.
And with rates, seeing them come down now with mm-hmm. the 10-year U.S. Treasury rate in around 4.25.
Yeah.
It's been hovering around 4. I think the spread, is that kind of how rates are set, is there's mm-hmm. typically a spread above and beyond that?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not certain right now. If you're going to take an adjustable rate mortgage, I want to be compensated for that risk.
Mm-hmm.
And so to your point, that spread just isn't really... there isn't a big savings, right? I'm probably that half a point that I'm saving on my mortgage, it's not significant. So I probably want a bigger spread.
Sure.
But that's just the landscape that we're in right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's really something because, you know, when you think about rates and cash flow, when we look at planning for our clients, you know, there's a lot of people out there that would say, you know, wait till rates come down to buy a house.
Right.
Is that something that people should be considering, or should they just be like, you know what, now's the time? It's probably a good idea to start, right, get on the train, as yeah. they speak. And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, the rate of inflation for real estate right now, it's going to be really area specific, but sure. in the Milwaukee area where we're at right now, if you look at how much housing prices are going up, right now, to me, I'd rather just get in and lock in
yeah.
on a lower rate, or I'm sorry, on a lower price than waiting for a lower rate. Because here's why. If everybody's doing that, as soon as those rates go down, we're going to have an influx of a lot more buyers. So what are sellers going to do? They can ask more for their house because there's more That's buyers. True. So prices are going to go up, and it's probably going to erode any savings you would have had by
there's
waiting
a relationship
for a lower
there,
rate.
Right? I mean, so many people we know bought their first home in the 70s or the 80s, or
right,
and now those homes are going for, the average is north of $400,000
right.
for a home in Wisconsin.
Yeah, the first time home buyer rate or sales price in Waukesha County is early 400s. I mean, early 400s. That's
barriers to entry, right?
Exactly.
So I think that's where many of us really want to help our clients understand this, because there's intergenerational wealth.
Correct.
There's ways that their kids, you know, the children of our clients are kind of trying to think about how to do this, graduating college, or maybe they're getting into the trades. Mm-hmm. Should they be focused on planning for that home purchase? And I would absolutely agree with you.
Yes, agreed.
So wonderful. So I've been meeting with Tammy Neiman, a wealth advisor here with EIG, and we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about different ways to think about home financing in the modern day.
Want to keep building wealth that aligns with your values? New episodes of Money Sense drop weekly. Subscribe now and continue learning how your money, your choices, and your life can work together.
Welcome back to Money Sense. I'm Jamie Williams, wealth advisor, and I'm here with my colleague Tammy Neiman. And today our topic is about home financing and some thoughts around different structures of mortgages that people may want to consider. And before our break, we talked a little bit about like conventional financing mm-hmm. versus ARMs.
Right.
Now that, you know, if somebody is interested in maybe making a change, looking at upgrading or downsizing, what are typically the first things that someone should be thinking about partnering up with a good realtor or lender?
Right. So if you're looking to sell your home, I usually say within, 90 to 120 days before you're ready to list, that's a good time to start interviewing some realtors.
Okay.
You'll want to have a realtor come in and they can do a CMA. And a CMA just is a comparative market analysis. And that can just kind of tell you what the purchase price might be set at to be competitive in the marketplace. And at that time, they can also tell you different things that you might want to think about to stage your home, whether it's a fresh coat of paint, et cetera. So that gives you a few months to work off a little checklist of things to do. So I usually say 3 to 4 months out, meet with a realtor. And then at one point, probably about 30 days before you're ready to list, you want to start interviewing banks and or mortgage lenders. The last thing you want to do is put your house for sale and realize, oops, I'm not credit worthy. And so you do want to make sure that that is in place as well. So in the Milwaukee landscape right now, you've got credit unions, you've got your banks, and then you got your mortgage lenders. Mm-hmm. They all have a unique space. It's fairly easy to shop interest rates online. I would definitely shop 2 or 3 banks or mortgage lenders or credit unions. I go with whoever you have the most experience or whoever has the most experience. And a really good resource would be your realtors because they're working with home buyers all the time. They know what banks are going to actually get you to the closing table and those that are a little bit more noise.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put it that way.
And it's a cyclical business.
It is.
So sometimes, title companies and banks, they may be right now sitting idle a little bit. The volume isn't there.
Correct.
But when refinance booms come into play, then it's all hands on deck.
Correct.
In this current interest rate environment, it's kind of, we don't have that magic crystal ball to know exactly where rates are going. But I think the consensus is that rates may be looking down at some point. We'll see. I mean, the data has to support it. The Fed's got a very difficult job to do in determining rates.
Yes.
But overall, I think banks, the health of the banking system, mortgage lending, the integrity of that, and everything is really there. It's really bona fide since 2008, would you say?
Oh, the credit quality since 2008 is exceptional. So what you used to be able to get away with in 2008 is not anymore in that
landscape.
What
do they call those? Stated income?
Stated income.
No doc.
No doc. No income verification. NIV loans. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Banks aren't doing those anymore.
No. But you got to, what's also interesting is 2008, there was a significant amount of borrowers that purchased homes with no down payments.
Right.
So even that, the credit quality is higher, meaning you do have to have some down payment in most cases. I know there are some exceptions with like WIDA or VA loans, some that you can do lesser down payments, but credit quality is good. I don't suspect that we'll have another mortgage bubble like we had in 2008 because the credit quality is quite high.
I've also found a great deal of benefit in having a relationship with your banker.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you're in a position to be thinking about maybe moving or building, I want to talk about construction financing in a minute or two, but those types of loans are not just a transaction.
Right.
It's very, very much more involved. So some thoughts on that. I think it's a good thing to have a relationship with a local bank, work with, a team, and then our financial advisors can work with your bankers to make sure that they have the information. Because let's talk about qualifications for a minute.
Yes.
Income verification.
Mm-hmm.
Have you run into challenges with verifying income for someone who's got some significant wealth?
Yeah. So what we have to do at that point in time is the banker is going to require. So some of our clients, and I know, Jamie, you've had some of these clients as well, they may not have significant income because they're retired.
Sure.
But they have a really nice portfolio. So what we've been able to do for our clients is put together a letter for the bank that says if they withdrew this amount every month, their portfolio would be well sustained. And the banker can use that letter And you count that as income. So that's one of the ways that we've been able to help our clients here at EIG even qualify for a home when, you know, it doesn't look, their fixed income just doesn't look.
It fundamentally, these people really should qualify for a mortgage, but they're not getting the monthly check or the monthly income,
right,
you know, that typically would see with a W-2
correct,
if they're retired.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
So, good point. Well, that kind of opens up some other ideas and concepts. You mentioned when you do evaluations of like a mortgage, you have a few different things that you look at. One of them is like income.
So there was three pieces that we would look at: income, down payment, and collateral. So think of a bar stool. It has to have all three legs. Otherwise, it's going to be a little wobbly, right? So those are the things that you want to shore up. Make sure that you have qualifying income.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, credit. That's a big deal. And the collateral is the one that some people overlook. Meaning, during the foreclosure crisis we had, we mentioned 2008, right?
Yeah.
A lot of these banks foreclosed on homes, and maybe somebody had lived in these homes for 9, 10, 11 months. The deferred maintenance was pretty extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as a lender, we wouldn't want to lend on a property that isn't solid. So collateral matters. So when you're looking for a home, I know one of the big things right now lenders are looking at is roofs. They want to make sure that you have a good life expectancy on the roofs. If not, it's very difficult to get insurance.
Right.
And banks want you to be well insured.
Yeah. And the insurance landscape has changed so much too over the last 5 to 10 years. It's incredible.
Yeah. And you were mentioning a couple of things as a banker that you would look at.
Absolutely. And I think this is where that relationship comes in with your bank, and having somebody that can understand your situation, somebody with some expertise, right? Some experience. And therefore, you know, we were touching on this as we were talking about today's show. There's something we refer to as the 5 C's of credit, right?
Mm-hmm.
You talked about income, collateral, and down payment, right?
Right.
So those are things kind of tie directly back into that. The biggest one I think that banks, it goes overlooked and people don't always think about this, but character is a huge one, because there may be a story. There was a time in which I had a gentleman come in, and he and his wife wanted to, you know, get a mortgage, and I was working with them. And he said they had a bankruptcy, and I was trying to understand why they had a bankruptcy. And after learning more, I mean, a lot of people would just said, "I'm sorry, there's no way I can help you." But because I learned more about the situation, and we were kind of able to understand it was a very isolated situation with her health. She was in the hospital.
Yeah.
It was a medical bankruptcy. And it turns out that that woman became the mayor of the town that I worked in, right?
Oh, wonderful.
Like eventually later she became the mayor of this small town I worked in. So it was really kind of a really interesting, you know, kind of experience for me to learn that, because capacity is someone's ability to pay. We refer to that more as cash flow.
Correct. Yeah.
And that's a huge part of our wealth management, like planning strategies.
Correct.
We'll talk about that a little bit more in our wrap up. Collateral, you touched on, capacity, credit. Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
So that, I mean, looking at your FICO score, it's a lot easier today to maintain a better credit score with automatic bill pay and some of those things. Whereas I remember the good old days of writing checks and dropping those in the mail.
I was at the grocery store and somebody wrote a check recently and I didn't know they still had those. So you're right. You're right.
So those are some things that people should be thinking about. A lot of times people get hung up on the collateral. Well, they'll say, well, it's worth all of this money. It's a lake property, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's the best thing for them.
Right. And nothing, even if you had fantastic income, fantastic assets, nothing will trump credit. You know, so if you have poor credit, you could have all the income in the world, all the best collateral in the world, but nothing will trump credit. So, and there's so many tools online right now that you can use if you have a bumpy credit score, that are like credit score simulators that can kind of help navigate that landscape for you, because you really want to strive for a high 600s, really want early 700s, like 720
plus.
740 would be great. Your interest rate is going to be determined by your credit score.
Absolutely.
So the higher the credit score, the lower the rate. So before you enter that landscape, make sure you understand your credit score.
What would you say in terms of cash flow, like debt to income? What's a good number for people?
Here's my rule of thumb.
Yeah.
So you take your gross income, and I like easy math, all right?
Easy math is
easy,
great.
Easy mental math. Let's say your gross income's $100,000. And if you multiply that by 3 to even 3.5%, that's the purchase price, or that's the mortgage amount you should be looking for.
Okay.
So $100,000 times 3 would be a $300,000 mortgage.
Gotcha.
Add your down payment to that. So let's say you're putting $200,000 down. That's a $500,000 purchase price you should be looking at.
Excellent.
So that's a good, just, you know, get you in the ballpark, start your Zillow search before you talk to your banker, but talk to your banker. They'll be able to zero that in. And sometimes it can be a little bit more generous with that rule of thumb, but.
We get a lot of clients that come to us and they're planning to buy a home in the next, say, 12 to 36 months.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously an emergency fund is a good thing. That's kind of like priority one. When we work with somebody, we want to make sure people have 6 to 12 months of an emergency fund set aside. But with their other funds that they're saving for the home, what are your initial thoughts on that money, that down payment money? What should they be doing with that?
Well, I'm not a fan, and I'm sure that you would probably, I know
probably
you would agree.
With you.
All right. Any money that you need in less than 2 to 3 years really shouldn't be invested in the market. So let's
not
just keep that down payment money in like a high yield savings account that doesn't have market risk. You'll still be rewarded in today's interest rate environment. Remember, mortgage rates are high. Well, so are saving rates a little bit, right?
Yeah, we benefit from that.
So the high yield savings would probably be where you'd need to park your down payment. Don't put that money in the market necessarily. So that's
talking to your banker, talking to your wealth advisor. You know, right now I just saw that 6 month CD interest rates were right around 3.75.
Right.
The US Treasuries, you know, you could do something in around the high threes there.
Right.
So good, very good information. Thank you. I wanted to just kind of, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about more of the customized lending approaches.
Sure.
That might involve things like bridge loans and
construction lending.
All right.
Love it.
All right. Sounds good. We'll be back after this break.
It's tax season, and here's something you might not know. Ellenbecker Investment Group is home to a dedicated team of tax professionals who partner directly with our wealth advisors to support your full financial picture. We believe smart tax planning is an essential part of building true financial well-being. If you're ready for a more connected, more confident tax experience, head to ellenbecker.com. You deserve exceptional. You deserve EIG.
Welcome back to Money Sense. This is Jamie Williams, wealth advisor with Ellenbecker Investment Group. I'm here with Tammy Niemann, and we've been having a great conversation about the world of mortgage financing and other concepts.
Mm-hmm.
Before we kind of go into some things that people might want to be thinking about from a financial planning perspective, I did want to get some of your knowledge and expertise around buying like a second home or a vacation home. I get this question a lot. I'm thinking about buying something down in Florida or Arizona.
Right.
Initially, what's your first thought on that when someone might bring that up?
Well, we want to make sure that we understand how long you want to hold on to the property, first off, right? If you're going to own a property out of state, there are some things to think about as far as maintenance, insurance goes. Prior to the show, we were talking about currently right now, Arizona and Florida are softening a little bit, but they always have. In mortgage world, we always looked at Arizona and Florida. They were kind of the first ones in and the first ones out, mostly because they have a transient homeowners. You know, there's a lot of snowbirds that move down there and then they want to move back within 5 to 10 years, right? To be back
with family.
We call
them halfbacks.
Yes, yes. So, you know,
they move all the way down and then halfway back because it's just too far away.
I agree. Yes. So there are some things to think about. So as far as that goes right now, Arizona is softening a little bit. I think we've seen home prices softening by 5 to 7% over the last year. The Florida condo market seems to be softening a little bit. So just make sure you're working with a really good realtor that knows the area. Make sure you know how long a softening market can be a really great opportunity to buy as long as you don't think you're coming back in 5 years. So understanding that horizon and the impact is going to be really important.
And doing your research to make sure that you're really comfortable with the decision.
Right.
Because so many people, are, you know, they get down there and they're like, oh, it's just not what I thought, you know.
Right. You know, and I can tell you in 2009, my husband and I went down to Arizona and we bought a house for 50 cents on the dollar. And it took probably five to six years for us to, you know, because it continued to go down.
It'd ride it out.
But when we sold it 10 years later, it was a significant profit. So I don't want people to be necessarily frightened of a softening market. You just need to have a time horizon that's right.
And a plan, right? Just know what you're walking into.
Exactly.
Another thing is with this world today, renting or the world of VRBO and Airbnb, that's actually turning into be more of a luxury for people to consider renting a place for a month out of the year or two, you know, incorporating the whole family contingent.
Right.
Those are some things too.
Right.
And then structure of mortgage. If they're going to buy the house, maybe it doesn't always make sense to collateralize the vacation property. Maybe using your primary residence could be better.
Right.
So
you usually get a little better interest rate if you can do like a home equity line of credit or do a cash out refinance on your primary.
Yep.
So again, talk to your banker, see what those rates are, and just be prepared on a second home. You'll have to bring in a slightly larger down payment than on a primary residence.
Something maybe like 20 or 25% along those lines. Yeah, the banks aren't just willing to do like the minimum down on those, right?
Correct.
So good. Well, very knowledgeable. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about what I like to call a unique animal, the construction loan.
Lending.
Yeah.
It is unique. Yes.
So who would you say are more experienced at doing those types of loans, like banks or
definitely
mortgage
work
companies?
With your local banks because you're going to want to have that relationship as you're building and because it is a unique animal. Mm-hmm. And so, again, it can be really complex. So one thing we do here is we make the complex simple. So I like to do that by giving a word picture. So if you're thinking about construction lending, think of it like this. You're going to go to your local bank and it's kind of like getting approved for a credit card to build your home. And then when you're done, you get your end loan. So it's a two-step process. So nobody likes that idea of a credit card to build my house. But basically, you're going to walk into your bank and you're going to say, I want to build this house on this lot. I need this much money.
Mm-hmm. Do people want to try to build the house themselves or do you recommend working with a really qualified
builder? So general contracting a home yourself puts a bank at significant risk because if you fall down and break your leg, you don't have a whole staff that's going to come in and complete the project. So there's very few banks, but a few local banks may do that for a significantly greater down payment.
Or maybe there's a way to do it.
But finding your builder. I mean, that's a whole checklist in and of itself. But once you found the right home, the right builder, meet with your banker, talk through the terms. A lot of banks can do 5% down, no private mortgage insurance during construction. And during construction, you will have a mortgage payment.
Mm-hmm.
But they try
to interest only, though.
Interest only, right. So just like that credit card, right? Mm-hmm. It's just interest only payments. And then when you're done, and it usually takes, I usually would say it takes 9 months from start to keys. It might even be closer to 12 months now because construction lending is, or construction is a little, there's a little labor shortage. Let's put it that way, right?
There really is.
So it might take a little bit longer, but once you're done and you got the keys, then you get your permanent mortgage. So it's a two-step process.
Absolutely. And working with a good title company to make sure that the draws get done and some of those things are all part of that whole mix. So there's added cost.
There is.
And there is also maintaining a healthy mindset and relationships kind of contingent with that too, right?
Yes. So I used to tell clients, I said, I will buy you a steak dinner if you make it through the construction process without a change order. And every time. every time clients are like, we've thought of everything. There will not be a change order. You will be buying us a steak when we see you for our end loan. I never had to pay out, Jamie. Not once.
Not once.
You're not going to make it through a construction, most likely, without some sort of change order.
Things happen.
I've built a couple homes, too, and I thought the same thing every time I had a little change order. So that's another reason we do want to be a little bit more. We want to have some cash during the construction process. So I always would advise clients to put the minimum down payment down during the build. Your down payment comes in when you get your end loan.
Keep
some money on the side because you have to finance those change orders with your own money. So it doesn't get built into your loan. So
in the same family of lending, we have construction remodeling. And that's a completely different animal because people have to think about, are they going to live in it while the work is being done? Sometimes that's impossible.
Yeah.
Are we going out or are we going up? But are there loans that specialize in that too?
Yeah, it's construction major rehab loans is what it's called. And this can be tricky because here's the problem. Or the tricky part of this type of lending is at the end, that house has to appraise out. Mm-hmm. And so if you are in a subdivision filled with 1970 ranches and you're taking your 1970 ranch and you're building up, that might be the smartest dollars, honestly. Mm-hmm. But if you're building up, I still have to compare your relatively new home to your neighborhood. And so sometimes that it isn't always easy. So I would always prepare my clients saying, you may only get 50 cents of value for every dollar you put into your home initially because of the comp pool. They can give adjustments for some on the appraisal for the condition, but you're in a 1970s subdivision,
right?
And so that can be some of the constraint. So again, if you're going to do a construction major rehab at a whole West Wing, you want to make sure you're going to be in that property for a little longer. Your time horizon has to be longer.
It's a feasibility problem, really.
Right.
Correct. That's a really great way to put that.
Yep.
So, and then you need a really good construction team.
Right.
And those are not easy to find with rehabs.
Not always.
And that kind of thing. But they are out there. And fortunately, we live in a great part of the country that has lot of great skilled trade people.
Correct. And you want to make sure you're improving the right areas of your home, you know?
Right.
And unfortunately, a lot of us just want new windows and doors. And that sounds, you know, it takes a headache off of what you've been worried about, maybe brings our energy bills down, but it doesn't really increase the value as far as an appraiser, right, looks at it. So when we're doing these construction major rehab, we want to make sure that we're getting the bang for the buck, the kitchens, the bathrooms, and maybe through peppering in some of those deferred maintenance is what an appraiser looks at, the windows and the doors. Although it's nice to have them, a buyer isn't necessarily going to pay 20% more because you have new windows, but they might buy your house versus somebody else with old windows. So days on market is what it shrinks oftentimes.
Yep. So it's definitely a selling point, but it's not going to be the thing, maybe.
Right. And at the end of the day, when we're financing it, the bank just wants to know that
it's bona fide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can sell the house for the right value if we get the house back.
That's amazing. So with our last few minutes together today, I want to just maybe talk a little bit about the concept of a home equity line of credit and what people might consider using those for. And then, you know, rather than hiring somebody, maybe there's some people out there that are willing to do a little bit of what I call elbow equity.
Yes.
And how they could use a home equity for those improvements.
Yeah. Well, home equity line of credit, again, my word picture, it's like a credit card attached to the equity in your home.
Okay.
It is interest only payments, usually for 10 years. And after that, they'll start asking for principal, right? Just like a credit card, it can have like a $50 annual fee. So you want to look at those annual fees. But if you open up a home equity line of credit, you never use it. You never have a payment on it. So sometimes it's nice just to
it's like
have
an emergency
that. Right.
Area.
Correct.
Really.
Correct. But as you start drawing at it, you only pay for the amount that you actually use. So it's great in your elbow equity example, because maybe you put, you know, it's going to take you 6 months to do the project. And so you can just borrow what you need,
what
just
you
like
need,
you would.
And then the key with those is to know what you're getting into when it comes to paying it off.
Correct. Correct. When you sell your home, you're going to have to pay off the home equity line of credit. Of course, it is considered a second mortgage. So a lot of clients don't realize that.
Gets people a little bit, you know,
right.
Kind of
right.
Their attention, if you will.
Exactly.
But it's not like, oh, we had to second mortgage the house. It's just a security lien position.
Right.
That allows you to utilize the home equity.
Correct. And typically it's a lower interest rate than traditional financing that might be double digits. So it can still be a great way to finance some home improvements.
It could also be a good way to help family, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes people may need a short-term loan, like
right.
for college tuition mm-hmm. or for an emergency.
Right.
There was one example of a client who was in a flood.
Mm.
Their home flooded and they were working with their insurance company, but it was going to take months to get reimbursed.
Wow.
So fortunately, they had a home equity line of credit. They were able to draw on that, get what they needed, take care of the repairs, and then get reimbursed later without having to cash in their portfolio and pay taxes and IRA, you know, distributions.
Right.
So forth.
And I usually tell my clients right before retirement, I want to meet with you
yes.
60 days before retirement, right? And while you still have your W-2 wage job, I always say banks, they don't want to lend to you when you actually need it. So maybe right before retirement, it's a good idea to get a home equity line of credit in place, even if you plan on never using it. But it's in place then in those kinds of emergencies, because when you're retired, sometimes it's harder to qualify because of the income component that we talked about earlier in the show.
Most definitely.
So it's a nice little planning piece that we'll often bring up right before retirement.
Those are great tools. And one final thought, when it comes to planning with our clients, we like to use, you know, we don't just sit down and put it all on pencil and paper. We use financial planning software.
Right.
Have you found that using the software has been able to help clients make more informed decisions about what they want to do long term?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. That is my favorite part of financial planning, is putting that up on the screens and like, let's dream together. We will solve for this is what you need to spend each month. We can solve for that. But then we can put in some underneath the wants category. Like,
mm-hmm.
I really want to buy that house in Arizona. I had a client like, I really just want to travel to Europe. It's something I've always wanted to do. So I said, let's put it in the plan. Let's see when we can do it. It was fun to dream together and see all that on paper and how it impacts the plan. So,
yeah. And one thing that we always like to frame is that our clients are always going to need a home over their head, right?
Right.
So the utility aspect of it, I don't always, like some people will make comments about how your home's a good investment.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it is, right? Long run, you're building equity, you're hedging inflation, you're doing all
right.
these things. But at the end of the day, it's really more of a utility play too. You have
mm-hmm.
to have a roof over your head. So it's nice to be able to put that in the software, because some clients are like, we'll never sell our house.
Right.
We're never going to use that money to have to pay for X or Y. So, well, very good, Tammy. We really appreciate you coming in with your expertise today. Did you have any final thoughts?
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Any final thoughts before we wrap up today?
You know, I like what you had last said there. You know, the home, I often don't put that in financial planning either, because I always have to replace the roof over our heads.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't use that to often fund retirement goals, but it just gives me that peace of mind. If something happens, I've got a home equity that I can tap into. So I think it's a place where we have significant wealth is through home ownership. And I think it definitely helps all portfolios to
Most
have a little
definitely.
Bit of real estate.
And I'm encouraging my kids too, as they're college age, they're getting out into the real
mm-hmm.
world, really to think about ways to position themselves to be able to buy a home.
Right.
And get on the bandwagon with that. So
exactly.
Great. So well, thank you again, Tammy. Thank you for joining us with Money Sense. We hope today's conversation made a difference in your financial well-being. And at Allen Becker Investment Group, we're always happy to meet with you to discuss what your, you know, overarching plans or goals are. Before we advise, before we plan, we always listen. Thank you and have a great day.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Money Sense, brought to you by Allen Becker Investment Group. If you found today's conversation helpful, we encourage you to share it with a friend or family member. and be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. At Ellenbecker Investment Group, we believe that education is the foundation of confident financial decisions. That's why we're proud to bring you insights from experienced professionals to help you build true wealth beyond just money. Please note, this podcast is intended for general informational purposes only and does not constitute personalized financial advice. Before making any financial decisions, we recommend consulting with a qualified advisor who understands your unique situation. For more resources, visit ellenbecker.com. We'll be back soon with more insights to help you live with clarity and confidence.